I would tell my young self, you know, there's some things I would just allow him to do. But I also would challenge myself and ask, what is your purpose, right? You know, beyond getting that second or third contract, beyond making 1,000 receptions or 1,000 yards or making it to the Pro Bowl, you know, what other things are you really looking forward to in impacting the game? And one of the, and the biggest thing I would say is be comfortable in your own skin. I wasn't comfortable in my own skin for a very long time.
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood, where we will prepare you to make your what's next in life your best yet. Our next guest is Steve Smith Sr. And Steve is a former five-time Pro Bowler and three-time All-Pro receiver for the Panthers and Ravens, was a 2005 NFL Comeback Player of the Year. Steve is now an analyst on NFL Network and co-host of the Cut to It podcast. Steve has a passion about him that is absolutely contagious, and we're going to have some fun on this one. If you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you tune in weekly. And also, if you haven't already, please go to Amazon and pre-order my book, Tackle What's Next, and the link to that is in the show notes. Thanks and enjoy. Steve, welcome to the podcast, my brother.
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm all good. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Man, you were out at Panthers, Patriots practice, bunch of fights breaking out. You bring that energy out there, or they bring it themselves?
You know, it's funny. A few people text me and accuse me of fighting. Man, I'm out there. You know, I'm wrestling with papers and ink pens and paper clips. You know, rubber bands. You know, I'm you know, I'm good. I'm not entertaining and interjecting that. Let them young men fight.
Would the body feel good enough to wrestle around anymore anyways?
Man, I have a 17-year-old and an 8-year-old at the house, boys. And then my daughter still, you know, she's still in the house. She's 21, soon to be 21. And we get a little bit of furniture moving going on at the house, having fun. I think I can, but I don't know. I might use some different tactics. When you play fighting with an 8-year-old, you learn a little bit. You learn some new dirty tricks.
No doubt about it. I got a 4-year-old at home, and all he wants to do is wrestle. My little girl, who's 7, she wants to wrestle too. But I'm like, baby, it's not nearly as fun wrestling with you as it is throwing your brother and trying to put him through the bed. Like, that's what he wants. I don't feel comfortable doing that to you, girl. But she wants that attention too. So. Yeah. That's the line you got to cross. But this podcast is about you. So let's start off this way. We're actually going to start in a similar way that you start your podcast, which is how I often do myself. I want to know about where you're from, and I know you're from LA, and how that impacted your journey in football.
You know, I believe it impacted my journey in football a great deal in regards of, you know, sometimes when we think of patience, perseverance, overcoming obstacles. We think of it as maybe standing in traffic, right? Which is extremely short. Growing up in LA really showed me, it was a long journey, really just showed me, you know, not patience, but just understanding that today's or tomorrow's no is really not a no. It's just a wait and see. And I believe that's very important, because I also know growing up in LA, how that played a role into my football career as well as handling disrespect. Right. And I think the way as me being African-American young man growing up in the inner city, I believe handling disrespect and how we respond in disrespect can be taken as a disease. And we get so immune to it that we don't even realize how our response in that. And some of that is violent responses. How that really can hurt you when you become an adult.
Right.
Right. It can impact you and let you see things through a pair of lenses, not even rose color, but just not conducive.
Right.
Not practical as a believer, as a Christian, not practical as a father, not practical as a husband, not practical as a man. And so, I learned some great things from growing up in LA, but I also learned some bad habits as well. And I had to learn, and I had to learn the hard way that that in corporate world, in business, football, professional, that's not acceptable.
Right. You're known as someone that maybe played with the biggest chip ever on his shoulder. Like when I think of playing with a chip on your shoulder in the NFL, I think of Steve Smith. Did that disrespect through your youth lead to that?
Well, I don't think that was it. It just, what led to the chip on the shoulder is, you know, one, people say chip on the shoulder and they bring me up, but you know, one of the things I find it interesting is I sit back, people call it chip on the shoulder. You know, I call it really my reality, right? So it's been probably about 6-7 months. I was having dinner with the former Carolina Panthers team president, Mark Richardson. So he lives down in Charleston, came up, and it was a group of us had dinner. And he made a statement which led into a discussion over dinner. And we had a few spirits. So it was a very fun conversation.
It got spirited.
It got spirited. But it was also like, it also gave me, I didn't hold back. He didn't either. And he kind of was like, I finally got it. Here's the example. He said, "Not too bad for a guy we drafted as a punt returner."
Wow.
Right? And I don't have a problem with it. But what I did have a problem with is, see, people say I have a chip, but think about this. They drafted me in the third round for a punt returner. However, statistically, I was like 20 yards, 21.2 yards averaging per catch coming out of college. Okay. I was a wide receiver who happened to play punt return. I got started playing punt return because my dad used to be a semi-pro kicker. And since I was like 8 years old, I used to go to park and catch punts.
Wow.
He would try to punt it because just like any other kid, I was just following my pop. So by the time I was like 10 or 12 years old, which is very rare, I was able to catch punts.
From an elite performer, not like from your high school or middle school buddies.
Like my dad wasn't a professional, but even a semi-pro punter is right. A lot better than a middle school or elementary school or Pop Warner punter, right?
Yeah.
So I've been learning how to catch punts since I was a little boy, literally. So, but if you look at my draft class, 2001 draft class, Michael Vick, Reggie Wayne. But there's another guy who was drafted with the same stature. His name is Santana Moss. Santana Moss is not 6 feet, is he?
No.
However, they never said that Santana Moss was undersized. Did they?
No.
They drafted him to be a what? Wide receiver.
Yeah.
Because he went to a school that they deemed at that time as good enough to perform in the NFL. But because I went to Utah, same height, I was only deemed as a punt returner.
Right.
Now, the reality in the long answer to that is, how is one guy who's the same height, same position, arguably doing similar things? I was not as dynamic as Santana Moss as a receiver. However, I was not substantially shorter than Santana Moss. We're kind of the same height, at least. I was a little thinner because of my frame. And what that draws me a conclusion is perspectives and also what people already are saying you will be. And so people said coming out of college that I will only be a returner. I can't play wide receiver, even though I played wide receiver, even though I lined up as a wide receiver.
On the outside.
I was told that I will only be a punt return, and you need to be comfortable with that and okay with that. And I wasn't. And I did not like the restrictions and the box that the team that actually drafted me for, they told me that'd be like you hiring a caterer to cater an event, but you tell them, I know you can cater everything. We just want you to do desserts. Well, what? No, but you want me to do? No, you just are going to do desserts.
Yeah, it don't make sense. And they felt good enough about you to draft you in the third round. Like that's
a reach.
Yeah, that's a big investment.
Here's the other part. I had a C4 burst fracture. I actually have fractured my neck in college.
Wow.
So there were some teams that actually medically failed me in the draft while they took me off their draft board. So, you know, so with saying that is I lived in a reality of some people say, and I had people telling me just be happy in the current job you have, being a punt returner. But I was a wide receiver who happened to play punt return.
Right. Yeah. So that drives you, that leads you, you could say play with a chip on your shoulder, but I'll call it a passion for the game, an aggressiveness about you. I also talked to our mutual friend, Big House Joe Ken, before this podcast, and he said, E. Wood, I don't mean to offend you because you and Suggs are the next two, but he said, including college, Steve is the hardest worker in practice I've ever been around. So even prior to the draft pick and saying you're a punt returner, you had that drive inside of you. I've heard you speak on it before that, you know, God put certain things inside of you and he put an energy about you. I talked about that passion in the intro. You have an energy about you that is contagious, that shows up every day. We do a prison mission together and you bring that energy. I see you at the Bills facility this spring and you have that energy and you just got stuck in traffic coming home from the practice and you still bring that energy on this podcast. So you have that about you, but then you get labeled as a punt return and then that takes it to another level. Is that a safe assumption?
That's a safe assumption, right? And then I had practice in my rookie year. I'm practicing. We first week of the season, right? I'm on an old team, right? I'm on a team with like Sean Gilbert in his 13th year. We had Doug Evans, Jimmy Hitchcock that used to play with the Minnesota Vikings, right? We had a whole bunch of old heads. And when I say old heads, I think right in the middle of the season, one time I walk into the locker room. We come in the locker room after a meeting and man, down the hall, like 15 chairs down, Sean Gilbert had as a guest. And that guest is the Minister of Defense sitting in that chair, shooting a breeze. Sean Gilbert and Reggie White are just talking like, yeah, man. Yeah, I had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich from Allison's. Man, they're a great restaurant. And I'm like, and so it just, man, it was just so awesome for me. Like, it just wasn't being in the NFL was, I was okay with it. Like, I wanted, when I was a kid, I'd drive down to the, ride my BMS bike down to the AMPM, and I get that package, like there was garbage pail kids, the baseball kid, baseball cards, and there's a football cards, Tops. And I used to get those football cards and get that chalked gum. Yep. And I chew on that gum all day. Chew on that. Man, I remember I got a Carl Pickens 1,000-yard club card. And since I was a little boy, I just wanted to be in the 1,000-yard club.
Well, you got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in Cincinnati, so Carl Pickens was on my radar too, but I outgrew, I out-ate that wide receiver I actually didn't have the athleticism either, but I definitely out-ate it. All right, so you mentioned coming in the league, and you're on a team with a bunch of veterans. So you got the privilege to see how they operated to maybe get to that point. When you look back, and I'm sure you talk to young guys coming in the league now, what advice are you giving those guys coming into the league? Because all those guys are looking at you and saying, man, I want to have a 16-year career. I want to make Pro Bowls and be an All-Pro player.
What's funny is a lot of guys they're actually not saying I want to play 16. They're saying, man, how did you play 16?
Right.
I think it's different. The players now, they have so much more technology. They obviously, the safety protocols are improving our game. I would tell my young self, there are some things I would just allow him to do. But I also would challenge myself and ask, what is your purpose? Mm. Right. Beyond getting that second or third contract, beyond making 1,000 receptions or 1,000 yards or making it to the Pro Bowl, what other things are you really looking forward to in impacting the game? And the biggest thing I would say is be comfortable in your own skin. Right. I wasn't comfortable in my own skin for a very long time. So being comfortable in my own skin, accepting and receiving compliments. Right. Taking those. And when someone says something, take it. Thank you. Sit with it for a little bit and then talk. Not wait to speak, but to listen.
Yeah, that's good. And that's something I actually heard about recently, and it said, like, when you shrug off a compliment, or if you say, man, he would, I see you're doing great, blah blah blah, and I immediately reflect that back on you, you don't get the pleasure of honoring me with the compliment. Like, when I brag on you and honor you with my words and you say thank you, that means a lot to me, and you sit on it, now I feel good about it. But when you deflect it immediately, which is our natural tendency as men to do, when you're driven and you're never satisfied, it's tough to take compliments along the way. And I'm a words of affirmation guy. I've done the love languages with my wife. Like, I'm a words of affirmation guy. I want her to tell me I'm doing a good job as a dad and husband. But when you give me compliments about playing ball and whatnot, but I'm like, yeah, but I can do this better. Yeah, but I missed that block. And so that's special. You said that when you said getting comfortable in your own skin, I often will say one of my biggest regrets is the first 6 years of my career, I never enjoyed the moment. Like, I never appreciated.
I got
one scholarship to the NFL. I didn't even start on my high school football team till I was a senior. And I ended up a first round draft pick playing in the NFL. I'm a captain, and I didn't enjoy one second of it, because all I was doing was looking around the league going, man, I don't have what that guy has. Man, I'm not playing as well as him. I didn't make a Pro Bowl. We haven't made the playoffs. We can't even chase a ring at this point. And I never enjoyed it because I was playing the comparison game my entire, first 6 years in the league.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good.
So you enter the league. Who's a wide receiver? You mentioned Pickens, but specifically, like, who's a receiver or a guy that you saw in the league that you wanted to emulate some of what he was all about?
Man, I mean, for me, it wasn't actually just one guy. There were so many wide receivers. Obviously, I live in North Carolina, and then right down the street in South Carolina, there's a guy named Sterling Sharp. Right. So I've had the opportunity to meet Sterling several times, and I remember watching his games and watching him catch passes from Brett Favre, watching him just dominate. Obviously, Jerry Rice. There's just so many. Herman Moore, right? There's so many guys. Tim Brown. Love watching Eric Metcalf. He didn't fare as well in the playoffs, but Michael Jackson with the Cleveland Browns. It was just, I love watching ball.
Me too.
I really enjoy watching ball on the different teams, right? And just watching the excitement unfold. Being a 49ers fan, you were never disappointed, right? But you always knew the NFC and the Super Bowl went through. If the 49ers, Giants, or Cowboys, whoever won, the NFC championship game would eventually win the Super Bowl. Right. So, you know, so that's, I mean, when I go backwards and you say, who do I highlight my game around? The funniest thing is there were very few short or undersized wide receivers. There was Henry Ellard and Flipper Anderson for the LA Rams when I was a kid when they used to play at Anaheim. But there weren't a lot of undersized wide receivers when I was growing up, you know, and I also believed that I was going to get a growth spurt that never happened at some point.
It might. It's still good.
No,
it ain't happening anymore. No, that's how I was too. It's funny that we both cover ball now too, because there's a lot of dudes who don't like watching other teams. Now they may watch film, but they aren't like a fan of the NFL. And it's amazing how the guys, one, that are well-spoken, but they also are fans of the game. Like the guys that would like tune into a Monday Night Football game if it wasn't necessarily a team that you're about to play.
Yeah.
Like those guys transition into media. But there's a lot of guys that I played with, and it blew my mind because I grew up a fan of the game. Like you, I had football cards. I grew up in Cincinnati, the biggest Bengals fan. So it blew my mind when I got to the NFL and like no one wanted to get together and watch a game, or like people were like tuned out on the rest of the league and weren't truly a fan of the game. Like that blew my mind that you could be in the NFL but not be a fan of the NFL. Like that blew my mind.
I mean, I guess it just kind of shows the – where the space is for some people, right? You know, not for everybody.
Right.
But there are people that grow up, you know, just loving basketball or loving, you know, I love tennis, you know, so.
Are you into pickleball now?
I don't like pickleball.
Come on.
My wife likes it. I don't know.
Have you given it a shot?
Several.
Okay.
Sometimes I've played at a, you know, we've gotten up on a Saturday, played. I've seen some pickleball matches because it's becoming big time. I participated, you know, I play with my kids, play with my family. I prefer tennis over pickleball.
Yeah, I get that. I don't think my elbows can handle tennis from all the snapping and whatnot. Yeah. You know, I got like a pretty bum right elbow. So I can play pickleball. I don't know that I could play tennis. So I'll give you that. I was just making sure you tried it. Cause if you're a tennis fan, like my buddies that play college tennis, they're legit at pickleball and they love it.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right. So I know it's not all sunshine and rainbows, even when we see you in the spotlight post playing and you're married and you got your kids and, you know, everything on the outside looks incredible. I'm assuming it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but I would identify you as someone that I look up to as successfully transitioning out of the NFL. And when I first started this podcast, because my career abruptly ended, it was What's Next with Eric Wood, because I was trying to figure out this next chapter for me. So as you look back on your transition out of the NFL, what advice would you have to guys? Because I think this applies to so many more people than just athletes. It's people that identified with a career, whether that's a CEO, a pastor, whatever it may be. When you get out of a career for a long time that so many people identified you as, what would your advice to be on successfully transitioning out?
I think before you transition out, take some time and have a little ADD, right? In discovering what you enjoy doing or what you don't enjoy doing. For a long time in off season, I would do all kinds of stuff. And that really helped me because I think one of the things that people don't realize is you got to understand, usually in our, you know, we go from high school, we go to college. We go to college, we go to the pros. And if you play 10 minutes or 10 years, you get drafted 20, 21, 22, and you play 10 years. So that means you turn 32 and you retire. You have no time to trick time off. You have no time to do what regular college students do. When you graduate college, you're 20, you know, you're 20 something years old. What do? You graduate college, you know, hopefully you don't have any debt, but if you do, you maybe get an apartment or you go what? Back home.
Right.
And then you try to figure out what's the next step. You try to figure out, maybe I should try to do this. Maybe I'll do that. Hey, let me try this sport. Let me try that. Let me look at my wardrobe, right? You do all those things. And so you kind of piddle around for a couple of years till mom or dad or aunt, uncle, grandpa, some mentor goes, hey, let's quit y'all jacking around and let's start taking work seriously. We need now. We've had that time to play around. Now let's be a grown up, right?
Right.
You don't get that when you're in the NFL. So a lot of times you end up doing that after your career. So as a 40 or 35, 37, 40-year-old individual, you now do what you would have done once you really graduated in your 20s, because you really never had that time to really be I don't know person. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm going to do. And so I think that's the biggest thing. You know, they talk about people that go broke after and divorce and all that stuff. I think because when you leave the game, you don't get to do what normal people get to do out of college. Like, you got to think about it. When you go out of college, you do this, right? You ascend. Well, I think I'm going to try this job. Oh, got fired. Let me try this job. Oh, got laid off. Or you realize, I don't really want to work that hard yet, right? And at some point around your 35, you start to find your place, and then you just start to land that plane, and then you build up your clientele, and then you having a 401k, and then all of a sudden, you just at 40-something, you start to go, and you go for the next 10, 15 years, and then you'll hit 50s or 60s, then you retire, and you go with the grandkids and have your house out, and, you know, I'm in Boston right now, so Cape Cod. Right.
Right.
But for us, we get out of college, first round draft pick, man, you start up here. And every year that you play in the NFL, it actually, you go this way. So by the time you're 35, you are retiring. And at that plane that the person who just graduated college 10 years ago, well, who graduated college 10 years ago, are starting to do. So you're doing this, they're doing this. And so literally you're doing this. And sometimes this person, the college student, is going this way. And we, the former NFL player, we actually go that way, the opposite direction. So for me, what I did is I started here like that. And when I turned about in my 30s, I knew kind of what I was going to do. And this is where the media stuff started. So I started interning, right? First, I did an internship with Morgan Stanley. Try to do an internship with Pepsi Cola, try to do it with Coca-Cola, try to do it with FedEx, UPS. They wouldn't hire me. They wouldn't let me. They were like, man, we can't hire NFL football players making millions of dollars. We can't let you intern and get paid $17 or $16 an hour and drive a truck because you're taking food out of other guys who are more qualified to make this earning, this wage than you are. And so, I got this radio station to give me opportunity to internship, did that. And the guy that I actually do the Panthers preseason game named Taylor Zarzer, he's the guy that talked me into interning at the radio station. And so that's how, and that's really how my next step was developed by flailing, you know, fish out of water, just trying to figure it out. And I figured out, hey, let's try this out.
Yeah.
And it's, now I'm heading into my sixth year of doing broadcasting.
And you're great at it now. And you get better each and every year. So I want to honor you that way.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I wish I'd have had you on the podcast earlier in my transition out. Now, we did get to spend some time together down in Louisiana, but yeah. I wish I'd had you on the podcast earlier because I needed someone to tell me it was okay to flail around, because it drove me nuts when people would say, hey, what are you doing with yourself nowadays? Oh, well, you're too young to do nothing. I said, well, I'm trying to figure it out. All right. Well, if you need a job now, I don't want to do that. Okay. Well, you need to find something to do. I got it. You know, and that internally, because I'm a people pleaser and just knowing how I'm made up, like I want to impress people and I want to always make it look like I got it all together. So for a while, like just being in that kind of flailing state, like, hey, what are you doing now? Well, I got my foundation. I got, you know, these businesses I'm kind of invested in. Like that should have been just enough. Or, hey, I'm just figuring it out. We just moved from our house in Buffalo or in Louisville. Like that should have been enough for me to accept, but I couldn't at the time. I wish I'd have heard that earlier, that it's okay to be in that state for a little while.
You didn't have a choice, though. It's
right.
You never had that space. And what I heard this from is actually Bryant Young, his wife Kristen has said it, that they are experiencing, they experienced kind of trying to figure it out, and they realized that people were shaming them.
Right.
Because they were trying to figure it out, because they should have had it all together. Says who?
Right.
Right? Like, why should we have it figured out? We just had a, you know, 16-year career, 10-year career, 9-year career. Why can't we have some time to just pause?
And I respect the guys that do have it figured out when they're done playing, but I often tell guys, I say, be careful if you focus too much on what you're going to do after you're done playing or what you're doing outside the game, or else your career will be shorter and you'll get to that a lot quicker. And as you transition out, I don't care. I mean, maybe besides Tony Romo and Tom Brady, but even Tony Romo is making half of what an NFL quarterback makes nowadays, and he's the top paid dude on CBS. It's going to be a lot harder to make up that salary. And it's not all about the money, but a lot of these guys are saying, man, as I transition, I'm going to get into real estate. So I got to set that up because I want to make some real money. Like, man, it's going to be really hard for you to make up that $5-10 million salary that you're really slacking off on your workouts to go chase afterwards.
Well, I think also too, you got to have it. You can't, especially in business, your first philosophy can't be to replace, you know, that NFL salary, because that's really hard.
Yes.
Even the moguls, you hear their story, none of them thought that they were going to be who they are today.
Right.
You know, I mean, you look at Elon Musk, and how did he start? PayPal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it varies.
Yeah, he didn't start putting people on the moon. You mentioned that you applied for a bunch of internships, didn't get them. I see you this spring, and you're going down around to different organizations and shadowing different members of each organization. So, hey, it's the strength coach, it's the trainer, it's the equipment guy. I want to see what they do on a day-to-day living. Did you get more of an appreciation for an entire organization by doing that tour? What else did you learn from that?
Well, doing television, I got a huge appreciation for what goes on and transpires in the wee hours of the morning when players are asleep.
Hmm.
Right. So if you think about it, let's go through the Super Bowl. Man, you play in the Super Bowl and that game is at, let's say, 1 o'clock or 5 p.m. Man, there's people prepping food. There's electrical lines being laid at 3 a.m. 3 a.m. before that game starts, 10, 12, 13, 14, 48 hours before, there are things going on. Great example is, you don't know this, but I do. When these teams go to Europe and play overseas, Germany, London, do you know how they get the items there? Do you know in which method they ship?
I'm assuming it's by boat, because plane would make too much sense.
Correct. Is boat. Both teams have to throw in things that they do not have in that country on a boat, and that boat goes down to wherever. Go. How about this? The first time we had a international game, they did not have, London doesn't make goalposts because they make soccer goals.
Right.
Did not have goalposts. They took a goalpost in New York, broke it down, threw it on a boat, and boated it to London, right? And that's remarkable, because as a consumer, as a player, we wake up on game day, we have no idea how many men and women take and do to make the fireworks go off, to make that banner look as sweet as it looks, to make that popcorn taste as delicious as it's gonna taste, right? All the thousands of cups and cup tops and straws, napkins, relish, mustard, mayonnaise, ketchup that goes on all the condiments that goes on all the food. All that stuff just doesn't magically appear by osmosis. Someone has to put those first of all, count them up, separate them, put them in a designated place. Someone has to place it. Someone has to design it. So much goes into before the game is started and the preparation. And then the preparation starts right after for the next game or for the next season or for the next schedule. So it's, man, I've just learned so much about it. It's just, it blows my mind how much time and effort and it is required to put on any event, let alone a world renowned event like the Super Bowl, right? It's just, I've learned so much and it's been just intriguing for me. And I've enjoyed every process of learning it because it's really opened my eyes to seeing how the NFL makes money or how it works, but all the men and women who help the NFL and who do the games each and every Sunday for, you know, was it 14 games, right? 14 games every week or 12 games every week for 17 weeks. Man, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, and that's really cool that you now get that perspective. Now, all the listeners, myself included, now we have more an appreciation for all that goes on. As you were talking, I was thinking to myself, like, how cool would it be for a Bills broadcast if I just got there one morning as early as I possibly could and just watch subtly as everyone's coming in, as opposed to coming in 3 hours before kick, hopping in the broadcast booth. I know what all it takes to even get a radio broadcast on the air, but truly appreciate it. Man, that's special for a game that has given us both so much. You know, yeah, it'd be one thing if we were sitting here and we were bashing the NFL, but we are, from my understanding, two guys that appreciate the opportunity, the platform, absolutely, and everything that the game gave us, because neither of us would be in this position without it.
But I'm taking a step further is not thanking the NFL or being appreciative of the NFL, but also thanking the, you know, if the NFL is the car, I'm not just going to thank the driver and the general manager and, you know, all that.
Yep.
How about oiling, how about greasing the lug nut on the wheel? Right? How about that not the windshield, but how about that wiper blade that helps keep the rain off the windshield so you can see while the driver is driving, right? Or the person who helped install the key or who helped install the button that helps the trunk lift up, right? That's what I'm talking about. If the NFL is the car, I'm talking about all the small little pieces of the car that are essential to help make that car operable, to make that car pass the inspection that allows that person, the driver, to drive and a seatbelt works to be able to pick me up to take me.
Right. Man, that is so good. That's so good. I appreciate you saying that. I'm so glad I asked that question. And because I saw you in the spring, you came through Buffalo, you were shadowing the strength department, which had to have been a lot of fun messing with Eric Ciano. He's my favorite person in the world to mess with, which generally is the strength coach. But anyways, all right. Last one, and then we'll get to a few recurring questions. What led you to start your podcast?
It was in COVID. Some people had already approached me several times and I just didn't like them. I was like, man, because, you know, who's the toughest receiver, the corner you've ever went against. And
man, so I'm glad I didn't ask that.
You probably wouldn't. but what changed my mind was I was listening, so I in COVID, I started taking up some boxing, right? You know, in COVID, everybody was exercising.
No doubt.
Right. And then, you know, I had a dog, so I was trying to take her on walks, and that was a way for me to get some fresh air too, right? Someone was like, man, so taking boxing, and I don't know if you watch YouTube and just how Customato created his fighting style with Mike Tyson, the peekaboo style. And so I was watching some Mike Tyson stuff and listening to it. And then all of a sudden, because I had that, a podcast came up called Hot Boxing. And I started listening to it. But one of the episodes that really said something to me was when Mike Tyson was talking to Mike Epps, and they were discussing how they were both in the same juvenile detention center at the exact same time.
Wow.
And as Mike was a kid, and Mike Epps was a kid, and they were at the same juvenile facility and didn't even know it until they realized it when they were adults, right? And so I just thought that was interesting because you knew Mike was had a colorful upbringing. You know, he lost his mom at a young age, didn't have a lot of guidance. He was, you know, doing some things that he said in his own words were, you know, some things that he wished he didn't. But I didn't know that about Mike Epps. And I didn't know that they at a young age were in the same juvenile place. And so that got me to thinking, just like I explained about the individual people, what they do to help the NFL throw on an event. I wonder how many other people and stories beyond football that I think would be intriguing. And so after that, we went into COVID. And so coming out of that, I said, all right, talk to some of my folks, some of my people, and I said, we're going to do it. But what we did is we didn't have an audience. We didn't have a show name. So I worked on trademark, worked on the show, the logo. But then I was recording, and I had like four or five recordings that were terrible. But worked on it, got it, and my agent was like, hey, let's try this, let's try that, how about this, how about that, you know. It was going to be Shooting a Breeze, Copacetic, like all these different stuff. And so, you know, it was polling people. And then so when we finally got the name and logo and all that stuff, I just started recording and started calling guys. Said, man, I'm doing a podcast. Would you be my first guest? Man, when I got picked up by iHeart, I had already had eight recordings already there.
Yeah.
Right. I asked, he was a neighbor at the time. I asked Anthony Hamilton. He's the one that actually did the intro music. Right. So I just said, screw it. If you're going to do it, let's swing hitting for the fence.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened. And so iHeart said, hey, we'll give you a shot. Gave us two seasons. Going to do season three, but season three will be a little bit different. Season three is actually going to be primarily football. It's going to be a football show in which in the off season, we'll go back to the one-on-one sit downs. But you know, that's how I got in the podcast. Really. It was, I said, all right, if I do it, I want to do it my way, which is I want to know the people inside the jersey, right? What makes them tick? Obviously, like you stated, where you from? I believe when you ask someone where they from, where are you from? And a place you call your hometown. I've been living in Charlotte for 21 years now. That is literally, I'm literally dead set where next year I would have lived in Charlotte longer than I lived and grown up in California.
Right.
And so I am, where am I from in the place I call my hometown? Man, I'm from LA, born and raised. Love Cali, love back home. There's, you know, I go back home and there's food. Like there's this Mexican restaurant called Ramona's. It's on 132nd in Normandy. I go to that Ramona's. That Ramona's has been at that same location since 1976. I've been going to that Ramona's probably since I was a little kid, 1980s to 2022. And every time I go back home, if I'm home for 10 days or 2 days, Steve Smith going to catch he's going to go ahead and get him a burrito from Ramona's. And it's cool because sometimes when I go back, there's dudes like, man, they said you came here when you was a kid. They said that you lived around here. And so it's always cool. And I've been going there. I've been going to that same place, man, for the last 32 years. You know, last 30 years, I've been going to that Mexican restaurant. My grandfather, my grandmother, my dad, me, my boys, Even some of my homeboys back home, what I do is I Venmo them some money. They'll get my order. They'll order like 10 of them. They'll freeze them. There's a whole system we have, freeze them. Then I give them my FedEx account. They overnight them. And if I'm home or traveling, mom knows, hey, my wife knows, when that product comes, you take one, put it in the refrigerator, let it defrost. You put the other ones in the freezer. And my kids are like, Dad, did it come? I'm like, did what come? Right. And so, you know, you're talking about my dad, my grandfather, my dad, myself, and me. Ramona's has now fed in the Smith household four generations.
Wow.
Right. And that's when I talk about my hometown. Right. Because it's just not on my block or, you know, some of the knucklehead things I did. But it's also the food, the history, the things that I learned, the things that made me cry. The things that I learned about myself, the wounds that I had, that now out of those wounds, I've had counseling over the years to fill that up with God's love. So it's just a tremendous process for me when I ask a man or a woman, where are you from in a place you call your hometown? Because like when I asked LaDainian Thomason, who grew up in Texas on a farm, and he watched his dad and his uncle kill a goat. You see the MVP Hall of Famer, and you hear this dude when he was 10 years old, how he was traumatized by watching his dad and uncle kill a goat. That's not on the back of a football card.
No, but then you fully understand his work ethic.
Yes, but you also fully understand what he grew up in. And when you hear him maybe sometimes hear that twang, you say, man, he sound like, man, LaDainian sound country. That cause he is. He grew up on a farm.
LaDainian.
Yeah.
That's how they'd say it in Kentucky.
Yeah. You know, so that's why I do my podcast. That's and I'm also a very inquisitive person, right? My wife says I overthink. It's not that complicated, babe. Just let it go. But man, I can't fix a Rubik's Cube, but I'll sure look at it. And analyze that thing and be like, man, why did y'all pick orange, right? Why couldn't you pick purple?
Right.
You know.
Well, when you're inquisitive and you're good, you're a great speaker and you have the platform of the NFL, I appreciate that you use that to bless people with those podcasts. So thank you for doing that. I got a few recurring questions for you. Let's do it. Do you have a favorite book?
One of the books that I love, Richest Man in Babylon. I've read that several times. The book that I've been on, I read it three times now. It's called The Bond of Brothers.
I'm going to have to check that out.
And that was real good. It's about men. And I love that one. And one of the things, excerpts of that is an unqualified compliment. And I never received unqualified compliments. And what I mean by unqualified is sometimes, man, just being told and growing up believing that you can do anything and people around you, whether you're doing it wrong or right, whether it's scribble scrabble, whether it's chicken scratch, to say that picture is so well done that if you keep this up, you keep practicing, you could be an artist. That unqualified compliment is true. Because we all know you can't see from a little kid through that chicken track that they will be Picasso, but something encouraged them to keep drawing.
Yes.
And I know if you don't receive those unqualified compliments, you're easily discouraged. And so that's why that's one of the things that I picked up from that book that, man, it's really made me internally look, but outside, externally, how can I give more unqualified compliments to my friends and family, but also more importantly, my children?
Yeah, because you know, this comes up all the time on this podcast. There was someone that spoke words of encouragement into you at some point that gave you the confidence to go chase your dreams.
Yes.
And it might've been unqualified at the time. And this is actors, music artists, CEOs, pastors, professional football players, athletes, throughout all sports, whatever it may be. It's amazing how a lot of times you can pinpoint it back to one person's words that gave you the confidence to say, oh, I can be great.
Yeah. Or.
Yes, I know exactly where you're going.
or that they didn't.
Yep.
And how that impacted you.
Yep.
So for me, Bond of Brothers is a really good book. I've read it now 3 times. And every time I've read it, I've picked up something more and more from it.
All right, I'm going to have to check that out. I know you're a Christian. We went on a mission trip together. But what role does your faith play in your life on a day-to-day basis?
You know, it plays a huge role in me. You know, I have some businesses, and I'll give you examples. I have a client right now, and I do some real estate and rental properties. And so I have about 24 rental properties that a management company owns. And I have a tenant who are having some criminal activity. And it's against legally, I can evict them, but they have some family situations that at the end of the day, legally, I am in every right to evict them right now. But they have some situations where housing cannot be found tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a process. And so I'm allowing them, even though they're not doing up their end of the bargain, I'm allowing them to stay in there, because one of the questions that I ask myself, would God evict you if you was out here doing some of the stuff you used to do? And I don't answer. And the answer is no. So I'm not going to evict them, but I am giving them notice that their behavior, I prefer them not to live in one of my units with that behavior.
Yeah. So you're letting your light shine before men so they'll praise your Father in heaven.
Correct. And so I'm basically saying, look, I disagree with your behavior. I'm not going to judge you, but I'm not going to tolerate you and also endanger other people around you. And so let's come to agreement that you will be moving.
Right.
Right. But I'm not kicking you out today, even though legally I can. And so I've been wrestling with that, because that's the first thing, you know, that someone was like, well, when are they leaving? I said, in, 30, 45 days. And they said, I'm surprised you gave them that long. I said, well, I only can do what I know God would not do to me, which is he wouldn't have, hey, get out of here. Right. And so that's how it's in me is operating and sitting down with my quiet time and looking in the mirror. Just like relationships, businesses reflect a business and relationship. If it's meaningful, it will reflect. And there's a mirror, and you see, you either like what you see or you don't. And you have to make changes.
Right. Yeah, that's good stuff. I appreciate that. All right, last one for me. This is What's Next with Eric Wood. What's next for Steve Smith? What's coming down the line for you coming up?
I'm going to work out, try to get some of this, get some of this COVID weight off of me.
I thought you were active during COVID.
I was active. And then I also hit I was active for the first 7 months. And then that thing went a little bit longer. I was like, you know what? What did I do? I think for a while, every 2 weeks we would do Rice Krispie treats, Fruity Pebbles, cocoa. Like, I did a lot of stuff. I created a love of pizza. So got a pizza oven now installed and do pizzas. Right. And I also love cooking. But what's next for me right now is really in the media world, doing things not based on money, but doing them based on do I enjoy doing them? Right. Mm-hmm. There's some aspect of media that I enjoy doing, and some of it is just, it's tedious. Right. Like, I enjoy having a job. I do not enjoy paying bills.
Right.
Right. But that's part of the job. So that's part of being a responsible adult. So I am now in the media world wanting to do things that I'm passionate about, that I enjoy doing, and that the paycheck is not deeming what my effort is.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is I've had to be extremely patient in doing that, because that means I've had to do a lot of few things, like when I saw you in Buffalo, that there's no monetary benefit right now. It was 4 or 5 episodes and months of filming with nothing to show for. And now, after doing enough of those episodes, we got us a season.
There you go.
Right? But it took me 9 months to pitch. And then it took 5 months to actually get proof of concept. And then get people willing to say, hey, come and do that here. So it was pretty, that's what I mean. And I've been having I got some great producers, some great folks I'm working with, and they're just letting me be myself. And you'll notice even this year, broadcasting and doing some of the stuff I'm doing, my perspective has changed dramatically. And bro, stop taking yourself so seriously.
Cool. I love to hear that. And in regards to your show, I heard someone talking on this the other day, a guy named Rory Vaden. He said, you know, when you plant a bamboo seed for 5 years, you have to water it and soil it, and it treat it perfectly, but you don't see one lick of it for 5 years. And then all of a sudden it's 80 feet tall in the fifth year. It grows all 80 feet in the fifth year. And it's a lesson on so much of what we do in life. We'd give up before that fifth year. If you didn't know enough about the bamboo tree, if you didn't know what was coming in the third year, you'd be like, what am I doing every day?
Yeah.
Nothing's coming. But hey, that show's going to take off. I know it because I know you watered it. I know it's got the right soil, and I know you put the effort and energy in. I saw it firsthand. So I can't wait for the success of that.
Yeah. Well, it's some stuff dropping in a couple of weeks that it's going to be pretty funny and fun, and had a great time doing it, and looking forward to doing the rest of it. And, you know, so I've been on your podcast. So this year, man, I love to get you on my podcast, talk a little football. So, you know, break down some of the linemen, talk about the Bills. Why are the Bills such a favorite? I don't see it.
You don't see it. You're lying.
No, I really don't.
All right. Well, we got to get you back up.
You want to know why I don't see it?
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
Because here's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of the athleticism of Josh Allen. And for 3 years now, you guys have drafted a running back. But yet when you need a play, you let Josh Allen rush with the football. $250 million you gave him, and you keep drafting running backs, and you never use them.
Well, maybe James Cook is the guy now.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe Zach Moss, or maybe Devin Singleton.
We'll see. No, I do see that. And you played with Cam, and this is a whole nother podcast. We won't go into this too far, but you played with Cam long enough to know at some point, I don't care how big and strong and athletic you are, if you take those hits, they will put a toll on your career. And that's where it is important for the Bills year after year to use Josh less and less. Like, you don't want to take something that is so great, what he does, away from him. But in the same sense, it's proven throughout the history of the NFL, the guys are too big, fast, and strong to constantly take hits, or man, else it's going to wear down your body.
Man, you can go, you know, everybody talks about Cam. Look how Donovan McNabb deteriorated so fast. And then before him, there was another quarterback in that same uniform that was six digits ahead of him, six digits more. They call him Randall Cunningham.
Right.
Right. Michael Vick. Like, you gotta, I love the mobility of quarterbacks. But when you're looking at the mobility of a quarterback to get you out of a pickle, that really play design should be, that's when things become problematic. And that's the only thing that I'm concerned about, because I do like Josh Allen. I do believe the Buffalo Bills have something extremely special. But you and I both know, even with something special, that window will close at some point. And generally, it rarely gives you a heads up. It doesn't knock like like the Grim Reaper does when he cuts you. He doesn't knock on the door and say, hey, bring your playbook. It just closes. And it closes on you in the midst of it. It doesn't say, hey, next year, you know, you guys aren't going to be very good. So do your best this year. It doesn't work that way.
Man, I got two quick ones for you. What's your confidence level in Ken Dorsey as OC this year?
I know Ken, so I'm biased. I think he's capable of doing it. You're going to have a drop off because he's not Brian Daboll, and Brian Daboll is not him. And he hasn't had the 25 years of NFL experience that Brian Daboll has had.
Right. That makes sense. Who is the Super Bowl favorite in your eyes?
I really haven't gotten there yet. Right. Because with this condensed preseason now, you're getting teams, unless you go to the dual practices, that's what you're really going to see. These preseason games now with the dual practices is an opportunity just to see the young players. The guys that you're going to fill up on your roster are playing on Saturdays and Thursdays and Fridays, not your starters. And so it's hard to evaluate and look at them in a preseason because, like, you know, Baltimore, Lamar Jackson's not playing. That doesn't mean he's not starting this year.
Right.
Right. But is J.K. Davins, is he back from his ACL? Is Rashad Bateman back from what he started at the end of the year? Right. How is the surgery with Joe Burrow? You're not going to find any of that out until when? Week one.
All right. Well, we'll have to touch back on that then.
Absolutely. You got my number. Don't at me.
No doubt. I ain't going to at you. I'll hit you up. Hey, I can't thank you enough for your time, brother. I'm a huge fan of yours. I always have been. And I only have more respect for you after this time we spent together. And I know the listeners will feel the same. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Good luck this fall. Keep doing your thing. And keep spreading that light too.
Hey, I got a question.
Yes.
How come in my retirement I go bald and then you still got curls?
Well, I'll say this. This hair was not a blessing for a lot of my life growing up on the west side of Cincinnati. But me and my son hung out with Jack Harlow the other day, who might be the top rapper in the world right now, who's got this awesome curly hair. And I told Jack, I said, and Jack Harlow's from Louisville. I said, Jack, I can't thank you enough. He said, why? I said, because my son is going to grow up in Louisville and he's going to be the coolest kid with this curly hair. And it was not cool when I grew up with it. Yeah. So I'm rocking it now, but curls are kind of cool now, but they hadn't always been.
Yeah, man, I wish. That's one thing I let my boys do. I said, because when it goes, so if they want to dye their hair, however, do it, because it's once it goes, brother, this ain't nothing but a private plane landing strip. Ain't nothing in that.
That is awesome. I appreciate you, brother.
I appreciate you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode, presented as always by Punched Energy Chews. If you haven't already, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Share it on social media as well, and we will share it too. I would also love it if you could pre-order my book, Tackle What's Next. It's on Amazon, and the link to do that is in the show notes. Let's keep making our what's next in life our best yet.